With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to Forever 35, a podcast about the things we do to take care of ourselves. I am Kate Spencer.
And I'm Dori Shafrir.
And we are not experts.
No, we're not. We are two friends who like to talk a lot about serums.
And before we get started with today's very special episode, a friendly reminder that you can check out our website, forever35podcast.com, for links to everything we mention on our show. We are on Twitter at Forever35Pod, Instagram at Forever35Podcast, and you can join the Forever 35 Facebook group where the password is serums. We also have a newsletter, which you can sign up for at Forever35Podcast.com. If you want to reach us, we have a voicemail and a text message number. It's 781-591-0390. We love an email. You can send a voice memo to our email. It's forever35podcast@gmail.com. And look, we always deeply appreciate a review on Apple Podcasts. So thank you for taking the time to do that. All right, Dori, now I hand it over to you because you've got to share how we are celebrating your book launch next week.
Yes. So we've mentioned this before, but it is going to be a 2-night virtual book launch event where I will be talking to many illustrious people, including Kate Spencer, Maureen Gu, Jasmine Guillory, Elizabeth Holmes. The list just goes on and on and on. So that is on June 28th and 29th. You can get tickets at the Eventbrite link in the show notes or by going to my website, dori-shafrir.com. And if you buy a ticket that includes a hardcover copy of the book, I will also personalize it for you. How about that?
That sounds wonderful. And I know this is, you know, not the reason why we buy books, but your book is gorgeous. I'm holding it in my hands.
Well, thank you, Kate.
Not only is the writing gorgeous and the storytelling gorgeous, but the exterior just feels good in my hands. Too much?
No, I appreciate that.
Well, I'm glad you do because, you know, we're doing things a little differently today. You're in the hot seat.
Ah!
I know. And I'm like kind of excited to torture you just a little bit.
Wow. I mean, Kate, please keep in mind, you have a book coming out next year. So everything you do to me will be done back to you.
That's
tenfold.
Right. I'm rubber and you're glue. It's all going to come back around.
Yeah.
Okay. So today we are celebrating your book coming out next week by just interviewing you. This whole episode is the Dori Shafrir guest episode. God. I know. Is that awkward or what?
Yay.
So
it's a little awkward.
Well, you know, I mean, what's interesting because your book is a memoir. So
I know, yeah.
You really, like, you can't not hide behind the fiction because that's not what fiction writers do. But I mean, like, this story is your story. It's nobody else's.
Yes.
For better or for worse.
That is very true.
So, Dori, I don't know if you know this, but on Forever 35, we love to start each episode off by sharing the bio of our guest. Now, we have... We've been playing around with this on the show because we received some listener feedback about how we intro our guests. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to read Dory's bio and I'm going to read the whole thing.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
And then I promise to go easy on you for the rest of the show.
Okay. I'll be because the judge of that.
Okay, here we go. Dory Shaffer is a writer and podcaster. Her first novel, Startup, was published by Little Brown in 2017 and was called Biting and Astute by the New York Times Book Review. That's a big deal. Her memoir, Thanks for Waiting, The Joy and Weirdness of Being a Late Bloomer, comes out next week. Dory is the co-host of the podcasts Forever 35, which won the 2020 iHeartRadio Award for Best Fashion and Beauty Podcast, and Matt and Dory's Excellent Adventure, a podcast about navigating infertility and the IVF process. She has also written about culture, women's issues, parenting, media, and celebrity for publications, including The Cut, The New York Times, and Slate, and was formerly an editor at BuzzFeed and Rolling Stone. She has a BA and MA in history from the University of Pennsylvania and an MA in arts and culture journalism from the Columbia University Graduate School of Journalism. She lives in Los Angeles with her family. Okay. You have, I sometimes forget that you have two master's degrees.
I know. It's like so many.
Like, very impressive. How did it feel to have to sit there and listen to that?
You know what? I think I kind of zoned out, to be honest.
couldn't handle it?
Well, I was sort of reading along, but it was like I wasn't really like absorbing what you were saying.
I get it. It's so awkward. Do you know what I mean?
It's very awkward and weird.
I do. And having to sit there when someone just shares things that you've done is very strange. But I actually was really kind of excited to read it because I do think, like, in the gabbing that we do on this podcast, I know I personally am like, I'm just talking to Dory. And you have accomplished a lot in your years. And I do think that, you know, it's nice to pay homage to the fact that you are a very accomplished and biting and astute writer.
Well, you know, it's funny that you say that because I recently rewrote my bio and I have like a couple different versions of my bio, like a short version, a kind of mid-length version, and then a long version. And this is the long version.
Okay. Okay.
And I had to really like I usually don't put like where I went to college or grad school like in my bio, but I was just like, I'm just going to put everything in here. And yeah, and I don't know, it definitely like felt interesting.
Well, I think one thing just in reading that out loud, you know, you've never felt like someone who's been behind in that way. And I think we've talked about this a little bit because, you know, oftentimes we are one way to the eye of the beholder and we experience life in a completely different way than what people see, right? And yes. you really experienced many things, as you describe in your book, kind of later or behind everybody. And that has been both challenging and I think also ultimately joyful for you. So before we get into some listener questions and talk more deeply about your life and your book, tell us, like, give us the elevator pitch of what Thanks for Waiting is about.
Well, you know, it's funny that you say that I never seemed like a late bloomer from the outside. And I do think that this is kind of one of those cases where I had internalized so much that the way I felt on the inside did not necessarily correspond to what seemed like was going on the outside. So, you know, I think I did spend a lot of my 20s and 30s sort of feeling a little bit like out of sync. Like there are certain things in my bio that are not in my official bio, but like, you know, I was an intern when I was 29. Which is like an age where I feel like a lot of people who make like the 30 under 30 lists have like, you know, started three companies and or like, you know, published 7 books or whatever. And I was an intern. Like I was kind of starting over.
Where were you an intern at 29?
I was an intern at Slate.
I was an intern at 26. Oh. And I always felt very old. I was an intern at... oh my God, why am I blanking? Metro newspaper, the newspaper that you would get handed out free on the subway.
Yeah.
And like everybody who worked there in very high positions were like my age or younger. And it was very, I felt very self-conscious. So I didn't realize that you were an intern at 29.
Yeah, I was an intern at 29. My, like, the person who was in charge of the interns was the editorial assistant who was like 24 or something. Like, he was much younger than me. And the woman who ran like the whole culture section, like it was basically like the number two or three job at Slate, was a year older than me and had just like done all this stuff, you know. So, she was only 30 at the time and she had this like very impressive resume. And I was like, oh, wow. Okay. So there's that. I also spent a lot of my 30s. Like, I was either in kind of dead-end relationships or I was single and kind of figuring out, like, do I want to get married? If I want to get married, how is that going to happen? Do I want to have children? Like, all of these kind of big questions that it felt like a lot of other people had just, like, made their minds up and made it happen for themselves, like, sooner. And again, of course, that is not the reality of like the world. Like, not everyone was doing this, but that it felt that way to me. And so my book is both about the kind of objective facts of, you know, being an intern at 29, but then also the pressure that I put on myself to reach certain milestones at certain times that, looking back, now feel arbitrary. Mm. I think that my book is meant as a kind of corrective to this idea that we have like these deadlines for things and that, you know, you really can kind of live life at your own speed and make your own choices. Like, make choices that are right for you, not the choices that you think you should be making at a certain period of your life.
And that's so hard to do. Do you remember a moment where you felt that shift, where you were like, oh, I don't have to meet this deadline, or I don't have to do things in this prescribed way by this certain age or certain time? Was there ever any sort of epiphany, or was it kind of a gradual realization?
I think it was gradual, but it was also a lot of it happened in retrospect. Like, I had been feeling quote unquote old when I got pregnant at 41. And then after having Henry, started just thinking about like all the benefits of being an older mom and being, you know, someone who had a lot of life experience like under her belt, if you will. And that just made me kind of like rethink everything. Does that make sense?
It does. It does make sense. I realize I skipped over a question I wanted to ask, which is that on Forever 35, we like to start each episode with asking our guests about a daily self-care practice that they have. Now, I know you share a lot by being on this podcast, and perhaps this what you share may not be a surprise, but I personally would love to hear about what is your current kind of daily self-care thing? Do you have just a tiny thing that brings you a little bit of calm in your life?
Okay, I have a couple of things, some of which I think I've mentioned on the podcast.
That's okay.
One of them is piano playing. I do try to play the piano every night.
Do you really? See, mm-hmm. We haven't talked about this. I didn't know you were still playing every night.
Yeah, I mean, you know, some nights I'm not home But I do try to play every night, and I do really enjoy it, and it's really rewarding to like master a piece of music. So that is something that brings me a lot of calm, a lot of joy, a feeling of satisfaction. It's also something that I like just do for me. As I've talked about before, like, I'm not, you know, trying to perform or somehow make money, or you know what I mean? Like, it's just a thing that I do for me. I don't look at my phone. Like, it's very meditative in a way, I would say. So that's one thing. The other thing I do is something that I feel like we share, which is the spelling bee on the New York Times app.
God, yes. I mean, we've gotten to the point where we text about it with our friend Danielle in our group chat.
Yes. Like, so constantly. I consider that also self-care. Doing the spelling bee, doing the crossword. I do the spelling bee, the crossword, and the mini crossword every day. I can almost always get the crossword through Wednesday. And then I have gotten the crossword on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday.
Ooh, girl.
But it's like not consistent.
Yeah.
And I would say I get like 50% of Sundays. I've gotten pretty good at Sundays.
That's great.
So that is also some self-care. And then I got to say, Best Fiends, I play almost every day.
Advertiser on our show.
Best Fiends advertiser, Forever 35 advertiser.
Dory genuinely loves this product. We love our product.
I do genuinely love this game. I do also find it pretty, it allows me to like escape in a way.
Mm-hmm.
So that is also something that I do every day.
Can I make a recommendation? I don't know if you've found yet, but the New York Times has a game that I just discovered called Letterboxes, where you have to create
words. Oh, yes, I love Letterboxed.
Oh,
yeah. I play that too. I play Letterboxed. I play, I sometimes do the Vertex, the drawing thing. I also recently got into Sudoku on the New York Times app. I'm really into all the New York Times games, pretty much.
Who knew we would be turning to the New York Times for games?
I mean, they did, apparently.
They knew.
Yeah, they definitely knew. And yeah, so those are all things that I do. I do also try to take a walk with Henry every day in some way. This morning, we took a walk to the Starbucks near my house.
Perfect.
Because I don't know if I'm going to have time to walk with him in the afternoon. It's also rather warm in Los Angeles this week, so an afternoon walk is like not as appealing as it is when it's a little cooler.
Yeah, it's very hot.
So those are all the things that I would say I do mostly on a daily basis that I do consider self-care.
I love those. Those are fantastic. Thank you for sharing.
Kate.
You know, before we get to our listener questions, I did want to ask a question, and then I think we should probably take a little break. And my question is this: what do you think it is about the obsession of age going along, age being such a big part of success? I mean, I think about these like lists that list people by, you know, as if the things they've accomplished by a certain age make them better than people who are mm-hmm. accomplishing things later in their life. And I mm-hmm. find those lists incredibly upsetting. Mm-hmm. And it feels like accomplishing things at a young age is valued more in our society. And I'm curious as to why you think that is and what you think we can do to change that narrative, to reframe that narrative, if you will.
Oh, Kate, that's such a good question. I think that humanity has always like overvalued the prodigy.
Ooh, like, quotable line. Yes.
Like if you think about it, you know, what's one of the things that everyone knows about Mozart? Oh, he started composing at 5, and you know what I mean? Like wow. Like and just, you know, this idea that you're showing some sort of aptitude early on as like, I don't know. It's like not, it's not even like a predictor of future success, because a lot of prodigies like burn out. I think there is just like a veneration and valorization of youth in general.
Yeah.
And so when people achieve things at a young age, we've like put them on this pedestal where we say that this is valued more. So I don't have like a great explanation for like why that is beyond just, I mean, I guess it all comes back to like fear of our own mortality or something. I guess it's like if you get everything done when you're young, then you've like achieved everything. So just in case you die young, then I mean, sorry, that got real dark.
No, but that is, I mean, but truthfully, I'm sure it's all, I mean, everything is connected to our mortality, I think.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a very wise answer, Dory. Thank you.
And in terms of what we can do to change that, I mean, I think just continuing to tell the stories of people who have done things at an older age. And not just for the first time. Like, I think that when we place too much of an emphasis on youth, we are also placing too much of an emphasis on inexperience and devaluing experience. So, you know, you think about people talking about people in the workplace and they're like, oh, she's been here for like 20 years. Well, it's like, yeah, she's been here for 20 years. She probably does her job really fucking well and like knows everything about the company. And you know what I mean? There's just this like perception that, oh, this person who's like 24 who has a year of experience is going to come in and shake things up. Well, you know, that might not be true all of the time, but that has become this like accepted wisdom.
Yeah.
When I don't think it actually is. So I think like respecting elders, respecting experience, is really important. Like just saying, you know, someone who's like 75 who writes a great book, like we should be as thrilled about that as someone who's 25.
Yeah, I'm with you.
So.
And as impressed.
That was a soapbox.
Well, you're known for climbing atop them occasionally.
That is true.
All right, let's take a break. And when we come back, we received a lot of questions about the writing, about your writing process specifically. So we'll dig into those.
Right.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend, John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
You know, one thing I think is really kind of interesting about skin, my skin, but all skin, is that like what it needs now in my 40s is not what I needed in my 30s.
Totally.
Definitely not what I needed in my 20s. But like, how are you supposed to know what your skin needs?
It's hard. It's hard to know.
Especially when there's just like so many products out there, the overwhelm is real. It's a struggle to even know how to get the results you want, what products to start with. This is why we're super excited to partner with Apostrophe. Apostrophe is a prescription skincare company that offers science-backed medications that are clinically proven to help. I have used Apostrophe. I love it. They will pair you with a board-certified dermatologist who literally creates a personalized treatment plan for your skin. I have done this a few times now. It is so easy to do their online consultation. You upload photos. And like within a few weeks, I had done the consultation and received my treatment plan and my product.
Amazing.
And that is how I became a tretinoin gal. I love the tretinoin that they sent me. I love their sunscreen. Both products have been amazing on my skin. And you, Forever 35 listeners, can get a special deal from Apostrophe. You can get your first visit for only $5. That's at apostrophe.com/forever35 when you use our code forever35. Now, that is a savings of $15. I like that. This code is only available to Forever 35 listeners. So to get started, just go to apostrophe.com/forever35 and click get started and then use our code FOREVER35 at sign up and you will get your first visit for only $5. Thank you, Apostrophe, for sponsoring this episode.
I think it's safe to say that we have suffered through bras. We've been uncomfortable in them. We've devoted whole episodes to finding good ones. But I'm here to say enough is enough. Enough, enough.
I mean, drawn the line. Dory, have I ever told you what I did in college when I needed a bra to wear with a fancy dress?
What?
I cut the top of pantyhose and then I duct taped that to my chest.
Oh. Sounds uncomfortable.
Because I didn't have honey love when I was in college.
No. Well, we are here to say no more being uncomfortable. With Honey Love's bras, you will wonder why it took so long to make something so comfortable and so supportive. There's no underwire, but through some kind of wonderful magic, they managed to not sacrifice lift. All while making it in a fabric that's so comfortable, you barely know it's there, especially the crossover bra. I wear one of these almost every day. I'm wearing one right now because it's so comfortable and it easily fits into my life. But if you like a breathable and versatile legging, Honeylove has you covered on that front too. Plus, they have tanks, shapewear, and their V-bra that has molded cups still without the underwire to keep you from getting that dreaded uniboob effect other more relaxed bras tend to give you. So treat yourself to the best bras and shapewear on the market and save 20% off at honeylove.com/forever. Use our exclusive link to get 20% off, honeylove.com/forever. After your purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them and please support our show and tell them we send you. Treat yourself to Honeylove because you deserve it.
You know, Dory, we talk to a lot of really fantastic, intelligent people on this podcast. But I don't know, maybe you're like us and you want to go even deeper.
I'd love to go deeper.
We like to go deep. And that's not only possible with today's sponsor, but also easy to accomplish on Masterclass. Every year I get really into the classes offered and the instructors offering them. Like, I'm all over the place with the things that I like on Masterclass. But this year I am very interested in the class Redefining Feminism, which is 14 lessons from Gloria Steinem.
Okay.
Now, they dissect issues women face in the U.S. and ways we can play a role in the feminist movement in our everyday lives. Look, I majored in women and gender studies in college, so this is right up my alley. But even if you didn't, even if you're like, this is the first time I'm hearing those words.
I would argue, especially if you didn't.
Yes. Get into it with Masterclass because this is the year you can really learn from the best to become your best with Masterclass. Go from just talking about improving to actually doing the things you've been wanting to do with Masterclass. And it doesn't have to be redefining feminism with Gloria Steinem. It can be gardening in your own garden or your yard or patio. It can be learning to cook Indian food or designing a space that you love. Masterclass offers over 180 world-class instructors. So whether you want to master like negotiation with Chris Voss or think like a boss with Martha Stewart, or maybe capture your vision through photography with Petra Collins, Masterclass has you covered. With Masterclass, you get unlimited access to intimate one-on-one classes with the world's best. And right now, our listeners will get an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/F35. Get 15% off right now at masterclass.com/F35. That's masterclass.com/F35. Okay, Dory. So.
Okay, Kate, let's get down to business.
Hey, are you mocking the way I conduct this interview?
No. Let's get down to business.
Do you know that song, by the way? It's like a very repetitive dance song on radio right now.
Ugh. I don't know it.
People who know it, they'll know. It's a real earworm. Okay. So I wanted to first kind of share some of the listener writing questions for you to answer because people really wrote in with a lot of great asks. Okay. So let's start here. How did you know it was the time to write? I believe they specifically mean this book versus 10 years from now.
I mean, I can't say how I will feel 10 years from now. Maybe I'll write another book 10 years from now. It just felt like I had accumulated enough experience and anecdotes and perspective on what had happened in my life so far, that it felt like it was the right time to put it all together into a narrative. Excuse me.
All right. Another listener wants to know, with so many books and writers, how did you feel empowered to write, all caps, your story?
I mean, this is like the eternal question, right?
Yeah.
And I definitely had some moments where I was like, what gives me the right to think that my story is worth sharing? I had those thoughts all the time. And someone very wise who I talked to about this was like, first of all, like, no man has ever wondered, like, whether their story is worth sharing. So that's number one. And like, number two, your story is worth sharing. Like, you talk about things really vulnerably and in a way that a lot of people are going to be able to relate to. And you're giving voice to feelings and insecurities that people have that they might not have been comfortable talking about with other people.
Yeah.
And so they're going to find like kinship with you. And I was like, okay.
Yeah, that's really true.
So that helped me just kind of think about it because, like, you know, I am not the first middle-aged white woman to write a memoir.
Well, and you won't be the last, I'm sure.
And I won't, but like, I also won't be the last. And so I think that also reminds me of like when people have ideas for a podcast or a book, and it's like, oh, well, that's been done. And it's like, well, yeah, at this point, like, everything has been done.
Yes.
But now, like, you can put your own personal spin on something that has been done before, and that has not been done.
Amen. I think that's so important to remember. And also, yeah. It's really, like, every story is – I mean, every person has a story, and I think everything is valuable to share. It doesn't necessarily mean everybody's – life has to be a book, but I do think that
yes,
we should all feel the value in sharing our life experiences.
Yeah. Who were we just talking about this with?
I don't know because we talk to a lot of people.
I know, but I feel like we recently had this conversation about people sharing their own stories.
Oh, this is was it with Georgia Clark?
Yes, it was. Thank you. Thank you, Kate. See, you remembered.
Mm-hmm. All right, Dory, here's a question for you that will be fun. Could Dory give a timeline for writing the book, how long edits took, and when a deal came?
Oh my God, okay. So it's a nonfiction book, and with nonfiction, you can often just write a book proposal and sell the book based on a proposal and then write the book. Whereas in fiction, for the most part, you have to have already had the book written. So I was pregnant with Henry. I was probably about halfway through my pregnancy when I started talking to my agent, Aaliyah, about writing this book. And she helped me put together a book proposal. And then we sold it in, I believe it was February 2019. And I started working on it. It was originally going to be a book of essays. And then Henry was born. And I did not work on it for about 7 months. I was so consumed with having a newborn. And like having a newborn in podcasting was like basically my limit. Which I didn't know going into it. I had made the mistake of talking to my friend Joe Piazza, who is like superhuman. It was right around the time her novel, Charlotte Walsh Likes to Win, had come out, or, and we were talking about it. She was like, oh yeah, I wrote that in, like, I wrote it all in the first 3 months of Charlie's life, like her son's life. Like, you're not doing anything. Like, she was basically like, that'll be perfect for you to write your book during that time. And I was like, oh, okay.
I can remember you being like, I'll just write it. Well, Henry, like, when the baby gets here, like, you just are going to write through that time. I can remember talking about that with you.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you know who else did that is former Forever 35 guest Elizabeth Holmes wrote her So Many Thoughts book when she had just had her third child. So, like, there are people who do this. Mm-hmm. It just turns out I am not one of them. I could not do this. And then when I picked it back up, I was, like, really struggling with it. And I remember I turned in a chunk of it in probably, like, January 2020. And my editor was kind of like, okay. Like, she basically was like, this needs to be, like, completely reworked. And I was like, all right. And I tried to completely rework it. And I was not getting anywhere. And I was like, this book is just not going to happen. Like, I'm going to have to, like, rip up my contract, give back my advance, and be humiliated. And as a sort of, like, Hail Mary last-ditch attempt to get it done, I hired, like, an outside editor named Carrie Fry, who's amazing. And the way outside editors work is you pay them money and they work with you on the book. You can hire them at different stages. Like, some people hire them to develop a book proposal. Some people hire them to be there, like, the whole process. Some people hire them to just, like, read a manuscript and give you notes. Like, there's like different things that you can do. And so I said to her, look, the revision of this manuscript is due September, I think it was September 15th. It was now May, I think. Can we work together? And she was like, okay, I have these, like, 2 months starting in mid-July where I can work with you, because she's really busy. And I was like, okay, like, I'll take it. I will take anything. And so we started working together. And so the way that worked is I sent her what I had. And I was like, she's going to come back to me and say, you know what? I'm really sorry, but I don't think we can work together. Sorry. Like, this is unsalvageable. I was pretty convinced that was what she was going to say.
You were really feeling it about this book.
Yes.
Yeah, I remember.
And I just, like, could not wrap my head around it.
Yeah.
And she did not say that. But what she did say was, I don't think this is a book of essays. I think this is a memoir. Ooh. And I think this is how it should be structured. And I was like, oh my God, like, yes, she's right. Like, this is how it should be structured. This is what it should look like. And so I emailed my editor at my publisher and I said, hey, I think I want this to be a memoir. And she was like, okay. Like, I think at that point I could have said, I want this to be, like, a spy thriller. And she would have just been like, just get me anything. And sorry, this is super long-winded, but this person did want a lot of details. So I'm telling you the real play-by-play. And so then Carrie and I went back and forth for a couple months where, like, I would send her pages. She would send me edits and notes and we would have a phone call. She really, like, held my hand for 2 months so I could get a draft of the book done. And so then I turned it into my editor at the publisher. And then she and I did, I think, like, 3 more rounds of edits. And then I turned in, like, the final version in January, right when my husband got COVID. So that was fun.
Well, someone did ask, where were you in the writing process when Matt got COVID?
I was about to turn in my final draft. And as I said on, I think it was on Monday's episode of the pod, that was a time when I was so busy and everything had been timed, like, within a second of its life to get to be able to get done because I also had taken on this freelance assignment. But I was like, okay, if I work on this at this time and then I do that and the blah, blah, blah. Like I had it all planned out. And then Matt got COVID and like everything kind of like went out the window. But I had to get the manuscript in. Like it was at that point, it was like so late and so like not negotiable. And I did it. I turned it in. And then after that, you go through one more. I think we went through one more round and then copy edits and then like final page proof edits. And then like the manuscript was locked and loaded.
And here we are.
And here we are. Yeah. So it was a journey. And there were definitely moments where I was like, this is not going to happen. I'm also like, I'm so sick of myself. I don't want to, you know what I mean? Like, God, who's going to want to read about this? Mm-hmm. And actually, Kate, oh my God, I forgot a really important part of the story.
What is it?
You read the manuscript.
Okay.
You and another friend of mine, Rachel, read the manuscript in December. And this was before I had put the finishing touches on what I was going to submit to my editor. But I was at the point where I was like, is this trash? Like,
I know, I remember.
Like, I lost all perspective on it. And I was like, I need someone to read it. And Kate read it. And she was like, I like it.
Yeah, and you gave me some great notes. Like, it was so far from trash.
But I just was like, I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
Anyway. Whew. Wow. Okay.
Okay, Dora, here's a question. What was your soundtrack while writing? Do you listen to music while writing?
So I do sometimes listen to music while writing. There were a couple things I listened to pretty regularly while writing. One of them was the Little Women soundtrack.
That's so specific. I've never even listened to that. Okay, from the movie.
It's good writing music. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I've also always been very... this has been music that I've listened to while writing for a long time, which is The National.
Oh, band. Yes, of course.
Just listening to all of their albums, that has been like really good writing music for me. Mm. There's also a few Spotify playlists that are like deep focus.
Yep, I know those.
And I'll sometimes put one of those on too.
Good tips. Dory, what is the process behind the cover art? What involvement did you have?
Oh, great question. So I was pretty involved in the cover art process. I think I was initially shown a few different like broad concepts for the cover, and we landed on doing something floral to kind of go with the whole like blooming, late bloomer theme. Mm-hmm. And so then once we had landed on that, then the cover designer sent me a bunch of different mock-ups of what she was envisioning for the cover. And from there, we kind of honed it down to what eventually became the cover. But I had a lot of input. Like, I had input on the color scheme. I'd input on the font. I'd input like they took my my notes, which I really appreciated.
Dory, will you write another book?
So,
are you about to break news here?
No, I'm not about to break news. I'm not. I'm just like trying to think how to phrase this or like how to tell this story. So while I was working on the book, I was like, I'm never writing another book again because the process was like destroying me, and it like destroyed my self-esteem. It was so just hard.
I can confirm that Dory did announce many times to me that she would never write another book.
I'm never writing another book. Yeah.
Never. That's what you said many times. And I
did.
Said,
I did say never.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But I hope you do. Okay.
And I think I want to modify that to say I don't want to write another memoir.
Fair.
I would be open to writing fiction. And I do think I want to try my hand at writing some sort of like mystery. Yes. Maybe not necessarily a cozy mystery. I don't know. I'm still kind of mulling it over, but I'm considering it.
I believe you have a mystery in you. Perhaps a whole series. No pressure. Yes. But I do believe it. Every time you were like, I am never doing this again, I was like, I don't agree.
Oh, God.
All right. I think we should take another break and come back and just share a couple more listener questions, more about your experience as a late bloomer.
All right. Let's do it.
It shouldn't be so hard or expensive to find furniture that exudes elegance, sophistication, and a touch of luxury. And we're happy to say that today's sponsor, Article, makes getting quality furniture as easy as checking the pieces out online. Thanks to their online-only model, they have some really great manageable prices. Article believes in delightful design for every home, so you can get to creating a space that truly reflects your personal style. I now have a space that is quite outfitted in Article. And I have to tell you how not just like seamless, but truly enjoyable the ordering and shipping process was. It was extremely fast. It's affordable, very convenient because I got to pick the delivery time and they sent me updates every step of the way. It was like they knew that I was an obsessive checker on shipping, and they were like, we see you, we honor you, and we're going to support that journey for you. As Dory knows, I have a beautiful bench from Article right when you enter my home. I have some gorgeous planters. And then my favorite, my kind of like surprise favorite piece from Article are the blankets I have gotten for my sofa that my family all hogs.
Oh.
Including my dogs. My dogs love these blankets so they're like throws on our couch. The dogs try to monopolize them.
Dogs are such blanket hogs.
They know a soft blanket when they see one, I gotta say. So their endorsement, honestly, their endorsement says more than mine ever could. That's how soft these blankets are. Article has all kind of curated furniture from mid-century modern or coastal to industrial, Scandi, boho. So no matter what style you're leaning toward, they have got something for you. I mean, you could really do like every room in your house in a different kind of style if you wanted to. And with Article's team of designers, no matter what piece or how many, you're sure to find the perfect balance between style, quality, and price. Article is offering Forever 35 listeners $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more. To claim it, visit article.com/forever, and the discount will be automatically applied at checkout. That's article.com/forever for $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
So, Dory, one listener wants to know, what are your favorite chapters in the book that we should keep an eye out for?
Ooh, that is an interesting question. I do think that, well, it kind of depends what your interests are. Like, if you're interested in like dating stories, then I do have some favorite chapters in the dating part of the book. Like, there's a chapter about someone I dated named Luke, it's like a hard chapter for me to read, but I like that chapter. And I think it's very relatable for a lot of people. But then also the chapter kind of on the same theme of dating, like the chapter where I kind of I go on a man cleanse and I kind of come to a lot of like revelations about dating. I really like that chapter also. I like the chapter where you and I are at the podcast conference.
Me too.
Our hotel rooms. That is also a fave. The chapter where I moved to LA. Yeah, those are some of my faves.
Someone would like to know, are you now able to handle rejection well? How do you get through those moments?
Okay. So I think that dealing with rejection is a practice. Ugh. I really believe this. And I do believe that the more you experience it, the better you get at it.
Okay.
But if you're scared of rejection, then you tend to not put yourself in situations where you could be rejected, thereby not getting the experience to become better at rejection. So I think one thing that helped me get better at rejection is I put myself in those experiences. Like dating is just a mountain of rejection constantly. But when I started going on a lot of dates with a lot of different people, and this was in the year after I moved to LA, I started caring so much less about each rejection and realized that I also had the power to reject.
Ooh.
It wasn't just about, you know, did this person like me? It was more like, do I like them? And so I think that, you know, when you can apply that to other aspects of your life, it will help you. It helps kind of bring down the stakes for everything, right? Like, it's like when you're applying for jobs, if you only apply to one job and it's like your dream job, and let's say you make it to like the last round of interviews and then you don't get the job, like, oof, that is going to sting. Like, that's going to really hurt. But if you apply to like a bunch of different places and get interviews at different places, and like each one kind of takes on less weight, and you can sort of picture yourself at different places. Same thing with like buying a house or finding the right apartment. And, you know, you see a house and you think it's your dream house and you don't get it. Well, you know what? There's probably another house. That's kind of how I've tried to deal with rejection. And it's also like, that doesn't mean that you can't be sad about getting rejected. You know, like, this is so dumb, but we had to apply to preschools for Henry this year.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one preschool that I liked most of the preschools we looked at. And I was like, he'd be happy. He'll thrive anywhere. He'll be happy. But there was like one preschool where I was like, oh my gosh, like, he will just do so great at this preschool, and I'll love this preschool. And I'll, you know, I kind of like fantasized about this world where he went to this school and he didn't get in. And I was like, those fuckers. How dare they? And then I was like, you know what? It's probably not even about us. Like, they had a slot to fill and it just went to someone else and it's fine. And I think, you know, not letting yourself like dwell on that, like letting yourself be upset, letting yourself be sad, but not dwelling on it and not taking it personally is what I try to practice.
I mean, I will reveal that last night at approximately 9:18 p.m., I did send you a very needy text message thread about, what if people don't like my book? Like, what if nobody likes it? What do I do?
Oh, yes.
And you gave me good advice. And you said, like, if someone doesn't like it, it sucks, but life goes on. That's a direct quote from a text message.
Well, that was a wise thing for me to say.
It is, but it's true. You were basically like, yeah, it could happen. And like, it sucks, but it's not going to be everybody. And you just deal with it. And I felt that was just like, oh yeah, okay. It's not the end of the world.
Yeah.
I thought that was very helpful. So thank you.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
Someone
but that took a long time.
Sorry.
That took a long time to, that took a long time to like be able to say, be able to do.
Well, and of course it's never 100%, like you're describing. Like you can always still feel frustrated or hurt by rejection. But I do think learning to kind of take it more in stride is, as you say, a practice.
Yep.
How do you know, Dory, when to go out on a second date, online dating, or just move on?
So my general feeling on this is if you are questioning, you should just go on the second date.
Oh.
You thought I was going to say the opposite, didn't you?
Yes, but is your point of view like, what have you got to lose, basically?
A, what have you got to lose except, I don't know, 2 hours of your life? B, I think first dates are not always like, are often not the best indicators of someone's personality. And hitting it off immediately with someone is a tough, that's kind of, you know, that's sometimes like a tough proposition. Like, you don't, like, I don't know, maybe the person had a hard day. Like, maybe they're really nervous. Like,
yeah,
people don't always put their best foot forward on a first date, despite their best efforts. And so I think that if you go on a date with someone and you see any like redeeming qualities in them, it is worth, and there is mutual interest in going on a second date, then you should go on the date. Now, of course, if there are any like real red flags, or the person makes you uncomfortable, or, you know, if there's any like real reason why you don't want to go on the date, I would say don't go. But if you're just sort of like, I'm not sure about this person, I think you should go on the second date.
All right.
I think I personally think 3 dates is like a good number to go on with someone.
Okay. Well, listen, for all you people dating out there, bring Dory along in your head. All right, Dory, well, how do
can
you
I just say, oh, can I can yes? I just say one more thing about that?
Mm-hmm.
I think that also often, and I talk about this in my book too, online dating in particular can lead us to get hung up on things that are ultimately not important. And I think it is important for people who are dating to try to keep an open mind about people. And like, we would want them to do the same about us, right?
Yeah. Yeah, we would.
So that was how I kind of, that was how my dating philosophy, if you will, evolved. Now, again, if you go on 3 dates with someone, the conversation is stilted, you're not really sure if you're attracted to them, by all means, don't go out with them again. But I think there is something to like getting to know someone over the course of a few dates that will give you a better sense of who they really are and whether you could see yourself perhaps going on more dates with them.
Thank you for that advice, Dory.
Oh, you're welcome.
I got one more listener question that I would love to share with you.
Okay.
How do you resist the pressure to only identify as a mom? How do you guard time to write?
Good question. I think it's hard. I think that it's imperative, at least for me, what I have found, the thing that works the best for me is when I specifically schedule time for things. So if I like, I know I want to write in a day, I'll put it on my calendar, like 11 to 1 writing. And then I don't schedule anything else for that time. And this, you know, I don't know what this listener's childcare situation is, or, you know, what else they have going on, or if they work full time, or what they are doing. But let's say you work full time and you want to still be able to write. Okay, then maybe you wake up early and you put that in your calendar and you write then, or after your kids go to bed. And even if you can only write for 15 minutes, that's okay.
Yeah.
I think we sometimes have this perception that like, if we're not sitting at our computers trying to write for 8 hours a day, then like we're not real writers. But like that is bullshit. Also, no one tries to write for 8 hours a day. I'm sorry. That is like
no, even when you talk impossible. To like full-time writers, they don't sit and write for 10 no. hours a day. No way.
No, I feel like most of them max write for 4 hours a day.
Yeah.
Because it is so physically and mentally draining to just write that you can't do it for that long. So I would say like steal that time where you can. And I actually feel like these are kind of two separate questions.
Hmm.
Like how do I find time to write? And then how do I not just be a mom? And in terms of like not just being a mom, I mean, I think that is just about reframing the narrative.
Okay. I've heard that before.
And thinking about like, what is the story I tell about myself to myself? And then that becomes the thing that kind of gets projected out into the world.
Dory, I think that's a perfect spot to end our conversation.
Thank you.
What lovely insight.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Kate.
Well, this was a real treat.
This was a real treat. Thank you for doing this.
It was really fun. And I'm so grateful for our listeners for providing such interesting questions.
I know. Our listeners are the best.
Yeah, they really are. It's like kind of surreal that we get to be a part of this community of amazing people, isn't it?
Yeah.
This episode will be running on a Wednesday. And, you know, we normally share intentions with each other at the end of an episode. And I just realized I didn't even like think to look at what my intentions are for this week.
I know.
Or next week. So I'm going to give us a pass.
Okay, great.
As the host of this podcast today, I'm going to give us a pass.
I appreciate that.
I mean, look, my intention is to support you through your book launch, read your book, and enjoy celebrating this really lovely memoir. That's my intention.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. And I hope to see many of you on Monday and Tuesday.
Well, you'll know I'll be there, so.
I can't wait.
All right. Well, Dory, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Kate. Wait, you didn't ask. Where can our listeners find you?
Oh, that's right. I'm so sorry, Dory. Where can our listeners find out more about you and your book?
Well, Kate, they can listen to the Forever 35 podcast.
Okay.
They can also go to my website, dory-shafrir.com. They can follow me on Twitter at Dory, on Instagram at Dory. And they can buy my book wherever books are sold. But
thank you
so
much.
We do appreciate a purchase from an independent bookstore.
Well, I will be sure to follow you in all those places.
I can't wait. Except for Twitter, because you're not on Twitter anymore.
I know. I do follow people still, though. I don't do it. So I think I do follow you already. So not to worry. All right. Well, Dory, on that note, I'm going to share with everyone that Forever 35 is hosted and produced by you, our guest, Dory Shafrir, and me, Kate Spencer, and produced and edited by Sammy Junio. Sam Reed is our project manager, and our network partner is Acast. And we thank you for listening.
Bye.
Bye.